This Is Your Life, episode 37. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Is everything you dream it would be? When the world was younger and you had everything. Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'll be talking about 8 leadership lessons from Martin Luther King Jr. These are some principles I gleaned from watching again his famous I Have a Dream speech, which he gave way back on August the 28th, 1963. So good and so full of wisdom. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Platform University, an online membership site for helping you launch your personal platform or take it to the next level. And you can find out more at platformuniversity.com. I'll be telling you a little bit more about it at the end of this podcast, so stay tuned. But let's get right into this episode. Next Monday, January the 21st, we celebrate Martin Luther King Jr. Day in the U.S. This is a federal holiday marking the birthday of Dr. King, which is actually on January the 15th, but is traditionally celebrated on the third Monday of January each year. As you no doubt know, Dr. King was the chief spokesman for the nonviolent activism in the civil rights movement of the 1960s. He was an eloquent preacher. He gave a very famous speech that really defined the aspirations of that movement, not only for his generation, but for generations to come. And I thought it would be particularly appropriate, in view of the upcoming holiday, to devote a podcast episode to that speech. Just recently, Gail and I watched the speech again. I have a link to the video of the speech in the show notes, as well as a link to the audio if you'd prefer to have it that way. But it's less than 18 minutes long. However, it's profoundly moving. By the end of the speech, we were both in tears. I urge you to take time to watch this speech and experience what Martin Luther King Jr. Day is all about. Even if you don't live in the U.S., he was a very important figure in history and had an influence all over the world. But while the speech is a masterpiece of rhetoric, undoubtedly one of the top 10 best speeches ever given, in my opinion, I also believe it provides 8 key insights into what it means to be truly a great leader. So insight number 1, great leaders do not sugarcoat reality. This speech came at a critical point in the civil rights movement, and Dr. King didn't pull any punches. He faced the most brutal facts of his current reality. In referring to Abraham Lincoln and the Emancipation Proclamation, he acknowledged,
"But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro has still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition."
Great leaders have to practice what Jim Collins calls the Stockdale Paradox in his book, Good to Great. I discussed this in episode 26, How to Lead in Turbulent Times, so I won't go into a lot of detail here. But the first part of that paradox, which you must master if you're going to lead, is the willingness to confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they may be. What does that mean for you? What are the most brutal facts of your current reality, the things that need changed? When you consider this, does something well up inside you saying, this isn't right? This must change. If so, congratulations. That's a good indication you've been called to lead. And step number one is to stop excusing whatever it is that is troubling you and call it what it is. I'm all for positive thinking, but sometimes this can get in the way and become a convenient way for us to sugarcoat something that needs to change. So insight number one, great leaders do not sugarcoat reality. Insight number two, great leaders engage the heart. While logic may compel the mind, stories and metaphors move the heart. This is the difference between offering information and inspiration, and Dr. King's speech is full of these kinds of stories and metaphors. To cite but one example, he says,
"In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds."
This metaphor of a promissory note or a check is incredibly effective. What are the stories or the metaphors that you use in leading your team? When I was at Thomas Nelson, I read back through the history of the company, and I read the story of Thomas Nelson himself, his life. I hired a professor at the University of Edinburgh, Scotland, to do some research for me, and then I used several of the stories we found to communicate some of the key aspects of the vision that we were trying to create for the future of our company. For example, when Thomas Nelson first started publishing books in 1798, he couldn't get the local booksellers around Scotland to pay attention to him. So he went around them and he began holding book fairs in the towns and villages. Or another example, Thomas Nelson's sons invented the rotary press, which revolutionized modern printing. And I use this as an example, a metaphor, that we needed to embrace technology as a company and constantly be looking for ways to improve our productivity and reduce our costs. So I was pulling from the past, yanking it into the present, and using it as something that engaged the heart, not just the mind. Well, what stories and metaphors can you use from your own organization's history? And you know, even if you don't have a long history, you can connect with the culture around you, distill metaphors from the culture your organization as exists today, and use those as a teaching tool, and again, as a way to engage the heart. Insight number three, great leaders refuse to accept the status quo. In fact, I would say that this is the defining characteristic of real leaders. They're not passive, they're active. They're unwilling to acquiesce to their circumstances. Dr. King continues in his speech by saying,
"But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice."
Notice that Dr. King did not just acknowledge reality. He rejected utterly the status quo and was willing to take action. I'm certain there were times he was scared, maybe feeling uncertain about the future, unsure of where the movement was headed. And tragically, it would cost him his life. But he continued to press forward despite the setbacks, despite the criticism, despite his limited resources. As I said in another blog post, courage is not the absence of fear. It's a willingness to act in spite of my fear. Well, what is it in your situation that needs to change, but other people regard as the status quo? They think, well, that's just the way things are. But you know, deep in your heart, that it needs to change, that the status quo is unacceptable. Are you willing to step up and initiate the conversation? Are you willing to speak the unspeakable and reject the status quo? That's the mark of a real leader, and that's insight number three. Insight number four, great leaders create a sense of urgency. They're impatient, but in a good way. They refuse to just sit by and let things take their natural course. They have a sense of urgency, and they communicate it. Dr. King says,
"We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment."
Now look, not everything can be urgent. As a leader, you can burn your people out if you forget this and make everything a top priority. I've worked for bosses like that. You've worked for bosses like that. You don't want to be that kind of leader. But in our own nation, the enormous and growing federal debt should be creating a sense of urgency in our leaders. But unfortunately, leaders of both parties seem to be content to kick the can down the road, unwilling to make the tough decisions necessary to spare our children and our grandchildren untold economic woe and misery. But in your organization, what is the one thing you have tolerated for too long? There needs to be a sense of urgency around that. Something needs to change now. Are you willing to identify that thing that needs to be changed and create a sense of urgency around it, to declare it your top priority and refuse to rest until it's fixed? Insight number four, great leaders create a sense of urgency. Insight number five, great leaders call people to act in accord with their highest values. I love this one. It would be easy for the civil rights movement to change tactics and resort to violence. Some did. However, Dr. King called his people to a higher standard, much like Nelson Mandela did when he became president of South Africa. Dr. King said,
"But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must be able to conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force."
This is huge. This is what separated Dr. King from other activists before and frankly since. He insisted on taking action, but within a larger moral context of right and wrong. Again, when I was at Thomas Nelson, our leadership team spent almost 2 years identifying our vision, our mission, and our core values. And that may sound like a long time unless you've done this kind of work and know how tedious it is and how much debate has to go on and just really how long it takes to wrestle this to the ground and come up with something that really captures your imagination, that creates alignment in the team, and something that you can all own. Well, we arrived in that process at five core values. And our first value at Thomas Nelson was, and is, honoring God. we weren't content to just let these be etched on a plaque and placed in the lobby of our building. So many organizations, I think, do that with their core values, and they don't really inform the behaviors inside the organization. But no, we went on to define the 5 to 7 behaviors that express that value so we could know when we were acting or not acting in a way that was congruent with those. One behavior that we wrote down for the value of honoring God was that, quote, we honor our commitments even when it's difficult, expensive, or inconvenient, end quote. So fast forward a few years, we're slugging it out in the middle of the recession. We're trying to save every penny we can, like every other organization we knew. Then we suddenly discover that one of our vice presidents had made a 6-figure commitment to a third party, something he was not authorized to do. And then he left the company. And we didn't know about it till this third party came up and basically called us on it. Well, we could have refused to honor that commitment, I suppose, citing the recession or maybe the fact that this former vice president was not authorized to make the commitment in the first place. But instead, we went back to our values. And to this specific behavior, we honor our commitments even when it's difficult, expensive, or inconvenient. You know what we did? We paid the money. I wasn't happy about it, but I was committed to that value and to giving it expression inside our company. And it was a powerful lesson to all of us that we can't violate our highest values in the pursuit of our mission. And as a leader, do you have clarity around your most cherished values? Do you have them written down? Do you have alignment within your team? Are you willing to stand by them no matter what? Well, insight number 5, great leaders call people to act in accord with their highest values. Insight number 6, great leaders refuse to settle. You know, it would have been easy for Dr. King to negotiate a compromise, to settle for less than his vision demanded. I mean, he got a lot, but he was stubborn in a good sense, and he persisted, and he called his followers to persevere. He said,
there are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is a victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our body is heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the city. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, no, we are not satisfied and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream.
Dr. King persisted. He refused to settle. I'm confident that he would still not be satisfied. There's still work that needs to be done in the civil rights arena. And now that I have 2 African-American grandsons, I'm acutely aware of this. We're not done. Yes, we've come a long way, and we need to celebrate the successes, but we still face racial inequity and injustice in our country. And we don't need to compromise. We need to confront, and we need to continue to cast the vision and refuse to settle. But where is it in your leadership that you've been willing to settle? Maybe you got 90% of what you needed to change and you're tempted to give up on that last 10%, but maybe you need to re-examine it. I'm not saying that you should refuse to settle on everything, but on moral issues, 90% is not good enough. So insight number 6, great leaders refuse to settle. And insight number 7, great leaders acknowledge the sacrifice of their followers. In a word, they have empathy. They notice the effort their people have expended and they verbalize and affirm it. Dr. King said this,
I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive.
This is so important. Acknowledging the effort and the sacrifices of your team goes a long way. In fact, more than you know. I devoted part of a blog post to this. It's called Four Things Your People Need in Tough Times, and I would encourage you to read it. There's a link in the show notes. But what price have your people paid? What have they sacrificed? Can you put yourself in their place and feel what they feel? This is the essence of empathy. When was the last time you acknowledged it? When was the last time you wrote a thank you note to a teammate and thanked them for their service? When was the last time you stopped at someone's desk and thanked them? This matters more than you can imagine. It will improve morale more than you can imagine if you just take the time to do it. Great leaders acknowledge the sacrifice of their followers. Insight number 8, and this is the final one, great leaders paint a vivid picture of a better tomorrow. You know, leaders can never, never, never grow weary of articulating their vision. They've got to be clear and concrete. They have to help their followers see what they see. Dr. King said it this way.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification. Yes. One day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. And every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain. And the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together.
This is key. Vision is the one thing that gives meaning to the trivial tasks of today. It's your job as a leader to connect the dots and show people how their individual actions are connected to the bigger picture. When I was leading Thomas Nelson, I got tired of talking about the vision, and I mistakenly assumed that my team was tired of hearing about it. No, vision is like water on a parched plant. People can't get enough of it. As human beings, we can't be happy unless we believe our work matters, and it's our role as leaders to affirm to our people that their work matters and help them see how it connects to the larger picture. A mentor of mine once told me, talk about vision until you're sick of talking about it, and then know you're only half done. What about you? Are you continuing to look for opportunities to express the vision? Are you articulating it every chance you can get? You've got to if you're going to have a successful organization. Great leaders paint a vivid picture of a better tomorrow. Well, I've only just scratched the surface. This speech is so full of lessons and deserves careful study, but here are the 8 insights again. Insight number 1, great leaders do not sugarcoat reality. Insight number 2, great leaders engage the heart. Insight number three, great leaders refuse to accept the status quo. Insight number four, great leaders create a sense of urgency. Insight number five, great leaders call people to act in accord with their highest values. Insight number six, great leaders refuse to settle. Insight number seven, great leaders acknowledge the sacrifice of their followers. And insight number eight, great leaders paint a vivid picture of a better tomorrow. I would encourage you in the spirit of this coming holiday to sit down with your family and watch the entire speech. It's less than 18 minutes long, as I said. It'll change forever the way you understand Martin Luther King Day. So now let's go to some listener questions. The first one comes from Alex.
Hi, Michael. My name is Alex Barker. My blog is The Medicine Cabinet at TooManyMeds.com. My question for you is, what do you think Dr. King would do today, or what do you think he would want to teach us if he were still alive, knowing the issues we face as a nation?
Alex, this is such a great question, and I'm a little bit reticent to put myself in the place of Dr. King or to speak for him, because I'm not a Martin Luther King Jr. scholar, and I just feel uncomfortable doing that. But I will say this. I bet, based on his character, based on this speech, that he wouldn't have settled and that his vision would have continued to expand. I think there was something inside of him that was restless until this vision came to fruition. And my guess, he would still be working at it. Maybe the vision would be articulated a little bit differently, or it would be more nuanced today. But he's the kind of person that would have continued to grow. And I think as leaders, we've got to do that as well. If we accomplish a vision, or if we accomplish it substantially, I think we've got to stay motivated and continue to pursue a vision for our lives and continue to shape the vision for the organizations that we lead. Because again, without vision, the people perish. Critically important. The next question comes from Christopher.
Hi, Michael. This is Christopher Scott. I'm calling from Turlock, California, and I blog at ChristopherScottBlog.com. My question is, I work with nonprofits and with a lot of volunteers, and just curious about what your thoughts are on how you cast your vision maybe slightly differently if you're trying to recruit volunteers and get them to buy into your work and offer their time to support your work. So be curious of your thoughts. Thanks for all you do.
I don't really think that casting a vision for volunteers is too much different than casting it for employees. The only difference is that you don't have the carrot of compensation when you're talking to volunteers. And the truth is, even inside an organization, if you think compensation is not that, or is that motivating, it's not really. On every human resources survey I've ever seen, compensation comes in about third or fourth in terms of what motivates employees. And I think sometimes people incorrectly assume that if they're leading a for-profit organization and people are being paid to do their jobs, then they have the right to demand a certain level of performance. And maybe they do have the right, but it's not very effective. You still got to engage their heart. So again, I would go back to what I said earlier when I was talking about the speech. You've got to engage their heart. You've got to connect the dots. You've got to help these volunteers see why this is so important. Because why do people volunteer for various causes, and why do they volunteer for your organization? Probably because they want to make a contribution. Probably because they want to do something that makes them feel significant. And so you've got to help them see that these small actions are connected to something larger that gives meaning to those small actions. So that's what I would constantly be talking about, is how does hammering this nail, how does loading this box on a truck, you know, how does coming out and doing hard work connect to the larger vision? Your job is to connect them. Great question, Chris. The next one comes from Core.
My name is Core. I'm calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota. I blog at justcore.com. In light of Martin Luther King's dream and leadership, how do you as a leader respond to the tension between pursuing a vision undeterred due to critics or challenges or lack of resources, while yet remaining receptive and responsive to those you are leading?
Core, the first thing I would say is that this is an art, not a science. I don't have a formula. I don't have a recipe that you can use for trying to discern the difference. I think in your own heart, you've got to ask yourself the question, is this input that I'm getting something that's designed to correct me so that I can fine tune the vision and make it even better? Or is it something that's a distraction and this person just doesn't get it? And so I think you've got to consider the context, that person's history, their own heart, what their goals are, and, you know, process it through all that and use wisdom. Again, I don't have just kind of a cookie cutter answer for you, because there are times when people do share information that's really important that we hear. And there are also times when we are getting set up to be distracted or to get off task. But I would do the first thing I would do is just really, really listen. I think people, if they feel heard and feel that you've considered their opinion, even if you ultimately disagree with it, they're much more likely to go along with you if they feel like you've heard them out. So start there by listening and processing and prayerfully considering what they're asking. The next question comes from Kim.
Hi, Michael. My name is Kim Goad, and I'm calling from Bloomington, Indiana. And my website is inkedbygod.com. And my question is, when it comes to a vision, what if you're just fresh out of a vision and have possibly completed the last one and are ready to start a new one? How do you get inspired with a new vision? What are the kinds of things you do to cultivate that? Thanks, and have a great day. Bye.
Kim, this happens to every leader. There have been times when I've been fresh out of vision, when I'm just tired, I'm fatigued, I want to throw in the towel, I want to quit. This happens to everyone. I would say first and foremost, get a good night's sleep. Sometimes you're just tired. You need a good night's sleep. You need some rest. You need to pay attention to yourself and get yourself in a more resourceful place. Another thing I would try to do or encourage you to do is change your environment. In other words, go on a retreat. Get out of your current environment. Go on a trip. Be able to clear your head. Go for a walk. Something that can help you connect again with the things that are most important and get your head above the clouds so that you're not kind of lost in the forest where you've lost your way. So get some altitude in whatever way you can, in whatever that means for you. But that always helps me, is to have a change of scenery, to be able to clear my head and to think back on what matters most, why I'm doing what I'm doing, and what is the reality, what is the outcome I'm trying to create, you know, 3 years from now or 5 years from now, and to connect with that in a way that really matters, and to ask myself the question, why does it matter? And to begin to write down a list of those reasons why. I think that'll help you. The next question comes from Matthew.
Hi, Michael. My name is Matthew Green, and I'm calling from Sydney, Australia. I run a new teacher mentoring website called imanewteacher.com. We can learn a huge amount from the work of Martin Luther King Jr. He was a man of incredible character. In a fast-paced world, how important do you think it is for leaders to do the behind-the-scenes work and refine their character, integrity, and discipline? Do you think these traits are important, even if no one ever sees them? Thank you so much for your thoughts. Can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Matthew, I think this is critically important. Character, integrity, discipline. Other people may not see that, but they see the fruit of it. Without self-leadership, there's no team leadership. You've got to start with yourself. I find that I'm the most difficult person I lead. And if I can't lead myself, I don't have the right to lead anyone else. And so these things are critical. Your leadership and the impact of your leadership, the effectiveness of it, the endurance of it for sure, will be dependent on this inner work, this real character and integrity that you build into your own life. So don't neglect it. Give attention to it and make sure that it's really your first and primary focus. The next question comes from Phil.
Hi, Michael. This is Phil Mershon with calledtoworship.org. And my question today is about leadership and management. I'm wondering if you can provide some critical success factors in leading team members to perform at their best and advance the mission of your organization without micromanaging. I'd appreciate any tips, and I love your podcast.
I think this really comes, Phil, from being clear on the vision and constantly casting the vision, and let people figure out the strategies for how they're going to get there. You know, your primary job as a leader is to articulate what. How they get there is not as important. And I've got a whole blog post that I've written on this called Why Vision is Not as Important as Strategy. But vision is the first and primary thing, and then let people get there of their own accord. There's a lot of different ways to accomplish a vision, a lot of different ways to accomplish a mission. And that's what's important, to continue to articulate that and not micromanage people, give them the freedom to develop their own strategies for developing their own ways of getting to the vision that you want. If you can stay focused on that, you'll stay out of their way so they can accomplish the important work that you really want them to do. The last question comes from Rob.
Hi, Michael. This is Rob Still. I blog about worship at robstill.com. My question for you is about Dr. King. What does he have to teach us about overcoming discouragement, especially when our ideas are rejected by those in power and authority? Thank you so much. Really appreciate the work you're doing. God bless.
I think in a word, Rob, the lesson is persistence. You know, if we're committed to something important, and if we're committed to change, we're going to encounter resistance. And oftentimes, unfortunately, that comes at the hands of the people who we report to or the people that have the power and the authority. And I know that's been my experience at every job I've ever had. But it is possible to do what John Maxwell talks about in leading from the middle. You don't have to become the CEO. You don't have to be the president. You don't have to be the leader of the department. You can live first and foremost out of the power of your own life. And this is why it's so important, as I was talking earlier to Matthew about giving attention to character and integrity and discipline, because the force of your own character can be a change agent. People see that and they want to become like you. So don't get discouraged when powers and authorities resist you. This has been the story from the beginning of time, whether it was Moses or Daniel or anybody else in history, is that they had to convince and overcome the powers and authorities above them. And they did that largely just by persistence, without compromising their values, but just being stubborn to persist. I really do believe that that's how change takes place. It's kind of like, you know, how water changes things. It's just that persistent attack on something that seems really hard, like a rock, and yet it can carve a river or a stream. And I think the same thing happens with us if we would just persist and stay at it and continue to show up and be relentless. Well, what do you appreciate about Martin Luther King's leadership? That's my question for you in this episode of the podcast. And to comment on this episode, you can go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/037, as in episode 37. Well, just a few quick announcements. Tomorrow, we'll be opening the membership to Platform University, as I said at the top of the program. This is a project I and my team have been working on for months. I am so excited about this particular project. My book, Platform, Get Noticed in a Noisy World, only scratched the surface, but Platform University is going to pick up where we left off there and dive deeper, bringing you the insights and the tools you need to build a platform that gets you, your brand, and your cause notice. So I would strongly encourage you to visit platformuniversity.com to learn more. We have already posted two videos that'll give you some important background and a sense of what's to come. They're free. And tomorrow we'll be posting the third video where it explains all of this and more. The second announcement is we still have a few tickets left for the Platform Conference, which will be held here in Nashville on February the 11th through the 13th, 2013. So just about a month away. This conference is for anyone who wants to jumpstart their platform, take it to the next level. If you're an author, a public speaker, a blogger, a recording artist, a business owner, an entrepreneur, a salesperson, a mortgage broker, a pastor, corporate brand manager, this conference is for you. We've got an incredible lineup of speakers, including Ken Davis, Pat Flynn, Jeff Goins, Stu McLaren, Cliff Ravenscraft, John Saddington, Kerry Wilkerson, Andrew Buckman, Michelle Cachette, and me. And you can get all the details at platformconference.tv. There's a link in the show notes. Third, my new podcast will be on taking control of your inner story. I can't wait for this, but you know what I'm talking about. That narrative that runs continually in your head and shapes how you perceive reality. And my premise is that if you change that, you can change your life. If you've got a question about this topic, please leave me a voicemail message at michaelhyatt.com/podcast question. This is a terrific way to cross-promote your blog or website, because I'll link to it just like I did with the callers in this episode. Well, that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I'd be grateful if you would rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps tremendously with keeping my podcast visible so people who have never heard of it can discover it. And if you'd like to comment on this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com. Go to the show notes for this episode and scroll down to the comments section. I would love to hear from you, whether it's a comment or a question or whatever. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life.